Well, of course, we want to welcome those online as well as those that are joining us at the West Side. And I just wanted to let you know that next week we're actually going to be starting a new message series called You're Not the Boss of Me. You maybe heard that if you're a parent. We're actually going to be using the book of Psalms to address the topic of emotions. Now, all of us here experience emotions, and we need to recognize emotions are actually a gift from God. They really help us express a spectrum of feelings that we experience in life, from the heights of joy to the depths of grief. Emotions can be like shock absorbers for the soul that allow us to weather life's inevitable ups and downs. But I don't know if you've noticed this, sometimes instead of just informing us that something is going on inside of us, emotions can sometimes tend to end up taking control over our thoughts and our actions and our reactions. And so in this series, we're hopefully going to explore how we can avoid allowing our emotions to take over and instead allow them to make us aware of maybe some important heart work that needs to go on in our lives. You can see from the slide there, the emotions that we're going to be exploring include love and guilt and fear and anger and grief and depression. And as I mentioned, we're going to actually be using the book of Psalms as our guide. But if I mention that, it's obvious that today we're going to be wrapping up the series we've been in called Rhythms That Revive. And even though we are wrapping up this series, my hope is that you're going to just continue to develop these rhythms daily in your life. And that's important because we've learned that healthy rhythms require intentionality. They don't just happen by chance. You have to be intentional. And the reason for that is that we grow by design, not by default. A lot of people think, well, I can just kind of stumble into growth. No, you need to have a design. Rarely, if ever, will you unexpectedly find yourself incorporating a healthy rhythm into your life. Which is why there were five things, steps that you need to take that we've talked about that you'll need. And these rhythms will never become reality unless you decide and plan and do and adjust and then persevere. Make sure you follow through. It's got to start with a decision because you need to be convinced that something, that these rhythms are something that you need to be doing. And then you need to make sure that you make a plan, because if you don't plan, it's likely not to ever become a reality. And once you make that plan, you got to do the Nike thing. You just do it. You put it into effect. And once you do, you're going to find out, well, you need to make some adjustments. It's not working here. It's not a good time or whatever. You'll need to make some adjustments. And then, of course, you're going to have to persevere. You're going to have to stay at it, because obviously there are going to be some times when you're going to be wondering, is it really worth it, this effort I'm making, or is it making any difference? Now, in this series, we've been exploring five rhythms that can revive your soul. And if you've missed any of them, I'd encourage you to go back. You can catch the message online at academychristian.org. But here's a quick review of where we've been. Rhythm number one, and we're using the hand to remind ourselves, is to humble your soul. Because when you need a ride, you're out on the road, you have to humble yourselves and say, can you give me a hand? And humbling your soul means recognizing and acknowledging that God is God and you are not. We'd really like to be in control of our world and maybe the universe if possible, but James 4:10 reminds us you need to humble yourselves before the Lord and then he will lift you up. And once you're regularly doing this, you're practicing this rhythm of humbling your soul, that's when you'll actually be ready for rhythm number two, the second rhythm number two, which is to direct your soul. And we're using the pointer finger for that because when you give someone directions, you usually use that finger. And all of us here are getting our directions in life from somewhere. And the most important thing that you can do to provide godly direction for your life is to spend time in the Bible. You got to read the Bible. And that's why this year we've challenged our church family once again to join in a Bible reading plan. We're calling it the Bible Book Club because we would like to corporately, as a church family, read 21,000 books of the Bible in 2021. Now, we got a slow start. We're off to a little bit better start. But we're going to need everybody to participate in this. And I promise that if you do, you'll be blessed yourself. And the verse we looked at there was Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, which says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't lean on your own understanding. That's what we'll slip into, thinking we can figure it out when we need God's wisdom. And so you get his wisdom, and then in all your ways, submit to him. And it says he'll actually make your path straight. He'll direct your life. Well, once you're practicing the rhythm of directing your soul, then you're going to be ready for that third rhythm, which is refreshing your soul. Because you're going to have to trust God here. Now, we're using the middle finger for that because it's actually the longest finger. And if you would like your life to last as long as possible, you need to refresh your soul. And the best way we do that is by spending time alone with God, just resting. It's hard to do, but it's good for you. It's one of the reasons why God established the principle of the Sabbath. And in Mark 2, Jesus reminded the people, hey, the Sabbath was actually made for man, not man for the Sabbath. It's important for you. And then once you're practicing the rhythm of refreshing your soul, you're going to be more ready for the fourth rhythm, which is to connect your soul. Last week, Pastor Logan did a great job, and we're using that finger because that's the ring finger, and that's the finger of relationships, because we were created to need relationships, and we know that because you go back to Genesis, and when God saw that there was only one person around, he said, it's not good for the man to be alone. We need relationships. Well, then, once we're practicing that rhythm of connecting your soul, you're going to be ready for that fifth and final rhythm. Rhythm number five is to extend your soul. You need to extend your soul. Now, there's really a good reason why we've not only saved this rhythm for last, but we're also using the pinky as a reminder. And if you'll notice, the pinky is actually the smallest finger on the hand of the rhythm that we're talking about extending your soul. And the reason we pick that is because Jesus actually said, when it comes to how we live our lives, the kingdom way is a little bit different. And he said in Luke chapter 9, verse 48, he said, for it is the one who is the least among you who is actually the greatest. And what he was talking about there is the attitude that we have about being willing to serve other people. And what we're going to see today is that we extend our soul by actually serving others, that we help our souls expand and the influence of our life expand by serving others. Earlier in Luke chapter 9, Jesus said it a little different way. He said, for whoever wants to save their life for themselves is going to end up losing it. But whoever loses their life for me is the one who will save it. Now, I'm so thankful that when I get to talk about serving at ACC, we have so many amazing folks who serve at Academy Christian Church, not only in the church, but in many different ways. But it was interesting because this past week, someone who helps out in our children's ministry, specifically with the fourth and fifth grade class, shared an experience that they just had last Sunday. This teacher was telling me that in addition to their regular lesson, they periodically like to go around the perimeter of the church. They go outside and pick up trash. And I think that's probably because they want to burn off a little energy from the kids before they come back in for the lesson. Well, the kids actually love doing it, and almost every week when they teach, they ask if they can do it. Well, last week was a beautiful day, and so they went out to do it. And in an effort to kind of tie a lesson in with the activity, the teacher asked the kids, hey, why do we pick up the trash? And they gave some answers like, well, it makes the church look good, and it helps nature. Well, he was, of course, trying to look for the right, you know, biblical answer, such as the one in Mark 10:35 that says, even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. And so he asked one more question, and it was, why do you think we do it as a class instead of just making Pastor Brian do it? And that's when one of the girls quickly answered and said, well, it's because he's old. And we can move faster and bend down and pick up the trash easier. Now, I can't say that that's a wrong answer. I think they can do it much faster than me. But when we hear about this whole idea of serving, I think there's a part of us that kind of expects Jesus to make statements like that. It's the one who is the least among you who is the greatest. And whoever loses their life for me is the one who will save it. But what you and I have to remember about God and about Jesus is that Jesus always practiced what he preached. He never asks us to do anything that he wasn't first willing to do and demonstrate himself. Now, to kind of put this into some little bit of context today, I want to ask you a question. And honestly, really, if it's you, you've got to raise your hand. How many of you would admit that on more than one occasion in your life, you've purposely stepped on an ant? Come on. It's a tough crowd, right? Or maybe you don't have to raise your hand for that, but have kicked over more than one or two anthills in your life. Or maybe experimented with the power of the sun through a magnifying glass and actually fried an ant on the sidewalk. I'm guilty of all three of those. I just bring that up because having treated ants like that, would you be willing to exchange being human in order to literally become an ant? It seems like, man, that'd be a long ways to go. And I know the analogy is inadequate, but honestly, you know, it's similar to the exchange that Jesus was willing to make on our behalf. In Philippians chapter 2, the Apostle Paul was saying that Jesus was in the very nature God. I mean, he's creator, he's sovereign over the universe. But he made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And then being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Now that's setting an incredible example. And I think it's probably obvious that you and I, we can't follow Jesus' example there in that same way. But fortunately, Jesus does provide an example that we can use as a principle and as a pattern. And it actually was demonstrated by Jesus on the night that he was betrayed and he was going to be crucified and then buried and raised from the dead. And it was with his disciples in an upper room together. And in John chapter 13, it says that sometime during that evening, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, knew that he had come from God and that he was returning to God. And that's really important to recognize. Jesus knew some things about himself that helped him step into this place. Because then it says, so he got up from the meal and he took off his outer clothing, which would be his more formal clothing, and then he wrapped a towel around his waist. And I think the disciples could maybe see what was coming because it says after that, he actually poured water into a basin and he began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. You know, even with as much time that the disciples had spent with Jesus, I guarantee you they had never seen anything like that. Their Messiah, their Master, their Lord, was kneeling before them and washing their feet. Now, over the years, I've had an opportunity to participate in several foot washing ceremonies, and it is a pretty humbling thing, not only to have your feet washed, but to wash someone else's feet. And one of them that I remember most vividly was a number of years ago when a team from Academy Christian went down to Ecuador and we served a church that we helped plant and then a children's center that was sponsored with Compassion International. And the last night that we were there, we gathered in a room with the people that worked at the center. And all of a sudden, they got out bowls and towels and began to wash our feet. And I got to say, there was hardly a dry eye in the room, because it was a very humbling experience. But it didn't stop there, because a little bit later, we actually turned it around and we had an opportunity to wash their feet. It was one of those things I don't think I'll ever forget. But what I remember in that experience is that what I've done in washing feet doesn't even come close to comparing to what Jesus did that night in the upper room for the disciples. Some of you might have been familiar because you saw it years past. There was this TV series with Mike Rowe called Dirty Jobs. And the guy was nuts. He went into these places and did all these dirty jobs that no one else wanted to do. Folks, back in Jesus' day, foot washing was one of those dirty jobs that no one but the lowest person on the totem pole in the servants would be forced to do it because there was no one else that wanted to do it, and there's a reason for it. And the reason for it is because back then, you remember, they wore open shoes. And they walked on dusty, and may I say, often dung-contaminated roads and pathways. When they got where they were going, their feet were a mess. Those were the kind of feet that Jesus was washing. And what he was trying to demonstrate to them and to us is that if you really want your life to make a difference, you're going to have to be willing to serve others, and sometimes it's not going to be pretty. But you know, honestly, when I think about what Jesus was doing, I'd have to agree, because there's something that I've kind of discovered over the years as a pastor, and that is that a good funeral is a lifetime in the making. If you're concerned someday about what your funeral service is going to look like, you're actually kind of prepping for it right now by the way that you are living. And I would always encourage you, you ought to live so that the preacher can tell the truth at your funeral. Okay, we don't want to make something up. But you know, as a pastor, I've done many funerals and memorial services, and I wish I could give you kind of a glimpse of what I've experienced during the times when we're prepping and getting ready for those services. Because it's kind of hard to put into words what happens when you walk into a room of family members and friends, and you ask them to tell you about their loved one who's just recently passed away. And sometimes it's a very unique situation. And sometimes what happens is that the conversation gets a little awkward. I'll say, tell me about your dad, or what do you remember about your grandpa, or tell me about your grandmother, or something you remember about your mom. And often the room is just heavy because of the grief, but no one seems to want to say anything. And it seems like an eternity, and people are waiting for someone else to speak, and then finally someone will speak up and say something like, well, I know Granddad really loved to go fishing. Or, you know, Granny, she really loved gardening. And everyone kind of breathes a sigh of relief. Says, oh, yeah, fishing. Boy, that was, Granddad really loved that. And then that's kind of it. And honestly, I'm sitting there saying, please, you got to give me something more to work with for the funeral service. Now, fortunately, I got to tell you, too, there are also other times when it's almost the exact opposite. And I'll say, tell me a little bit more about your loved one. And right away, they start bringing up stories of all the ways that their loved one served them and cared for them and extended their life through them. And there's this rich depth of emotion because their life meant so much to these people. And everybody's crying, and there are sad tears of loss, but there's also heartfelt tears of gratitude, and it's pretty emotional. And it's not just sadness for that person being gone. There's this real sense of loss because that person's life made a contribution. But I would just say, all too often, especially outside the church, that's the exception. And more often than not, when someone dies, There's just not a whole lot of their life that actually lives on. And that's why I would just encourage you, while there's still time to make some meaningful adjustments, we need to be asking ourselves, how can I live in a way that makes the most of my one and only life? And a simple way to tell if you've made the most of your life is just maybe to ask the question, will anyone miss me when I die? And not just my presence, but how about because I've made a difference in their life? See, I guarantee you that people are not going to miss you because of your personal accomplishments. They might be proud of that, but people will miss you because you had an impact on their life, usually by serving them in some way. There's a great example in the book of Acts, chapter 9, and there the apostle Peter was ministering in one town called Lydda, and about 10 or 11 miles away in the town of Joppa, we discover that a faithful follower of Christ died. And so they immediately sent for Peter to come as an apostle. And in Acts 9:39, it says, Peter went with them, and when he arrived, he was taken upstairs to the room. And all the widows stood around him, crying. You know why they're crying, though? Showing him the robes and the other clothes that Dorcas had made for them while she was still living. See how she was extending her life? Even when she was gone, people were saying, oh no, this woman served in an amazing way. You know how you extend your life? You extend your life by serving others. Now, I need to remind you that anytime you start to serve others, the more you do for others, the less you can do for yourself. That's true. That's the handoff. But the more you do for others, I guarantee you, the greater impact your life is going to have. And that's one of the reasons why when Jesus was quoted in Acts chapter 20, he tried to warn us and say, hey, it is more blessed to give than it is to receive. It's just a little bit hard to get there. And there's actually a test that you can administer to determine if you've actually developed a servant's heart. And the way that you know that you have a servant's heart is when you get treated like one and it doesn't bother you. It's easy to serve when people are patting you on the back and saying what a good job, but when nobody notices and you're all alone and feels like everybody's looking down on you, that's when you can really tell. I think the Apostle Paul kind of describes it in this way in Philippians 2, 3, and 4. He says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. Not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. On the night of June 15th, 2012, anybody remember that? The world actually kind of collectively held its breath because Nick Walenda was attempting to walk across the falls at Niagara. And, of course, he was successful, and the 1,800-foot-long walk put him into the history books. But it's actually where he walked the following day that I think truly defines him. He's a Christ follower, and Nick would call himself an aerialist, and as the seventh-generation member of the Flying Walendas, it's not uncommon at all to find Nick flying through the air, trying to accomplish one death-defying feat after another, like walking a tightrope across the Baltimore Harbor or hanging from a helicopter by his teeth over Branson, Missouri, or walking between two skyscrapers in Chicago. And so probably his attempt to walk across Niagara Falls the summer of 2012 was just like the next step in his career. Well, after working on the event for a couple of years, the time came for him to actually step out onto the wire. And crossing the 1,800 feet from America into Canada with his U.S. passport in his pocket so he could get in, Walenda took calculated steps, factoring in the mist and the wind and the roar of the waterfalls. And finally, 25 tense minutes later, he stepped off the wire and into the history books. And it was amazing. It was an attention-grabbing walk for sure, aired by ABC. His death-defying feat was witnessed live by millions of viewers all over the world. But in his autobiography entitled Balance, Walenda revealed a very ordinary walk that he took the next day. See, apparently the day after his walk over Niagara Falls, he returned to Goat Island on the U.S. side so he could help pick up garbage, garbage that was left by the crowds that had shown up to see him. Why is that? Well, Nick explains, 3 hours of cleaning up debris is good for my soul. Humility does not come naturally to me. And so if I have to force myself into a situation that is humbling, so be it. And then he went on. The huge crowd left behind a great deal of trash, and I felt compelled to pitch in. My purpose was simply to help clean up. And besides, after the inordinate amount of attention I just received, I needed to keep myself grounded. Now, unfortunately, not everyone believes what he did was authentic. In fact, he had someone tell him, well, that's just vain humility. You do it because it makes you look good. But he's always careful never to let the press find out what he's done. And he says, I do it because it's a way of keeping myself from tripping. As a follower of Christ, I see him washing the feet of others. And then he said, if I don't serve others, I'll be serving nothing but my ego. If I don't serve others, I'll be serving nothing but my ego. So let me ask, what do you think was his most important walk? Was it the one in front of millions of TV viewers, or was it the private one he took to serve? Jesus would say, the one who is the greatest among you becomes the least. And so this would be my takeaway for this morning or today. I would want, hopefully, for all of us to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to extend the impact of my life by intentionally serving others. Now, already many of you are doing that, and if you are, I just want to say keep serving. But there's some of you here who might be saying, I'm just not sure what I would do to serve others. I don't know where to begin. I would just say, don't make it too hard. Start real simple. You could encourage just a lonely person at work. Just say, hey, I'm just going to encourage someone at work, and you could make their life different. You could maybe befriend a widow or widower who lives next door. You could maybe start a small group. You might just decide, I'm going to pray for somebody every day. Or maybe you could step out and help an unwed teenage mom. There's lots of opportunities if you want to volunteer at some of the ministries that we support here at ACC, like Crossfire and Mercy's Gate and Life Network. In fact, today you could even sign up in the foyer to be a part of our next Be the Church every day, one Saturday a month. You know what we do? We just go out to serve in the community. Maybe you have some musical gifts that you could use to help people worship God. You could, if you wanted to, and I'd recommend this, just be so happy in Jesus that people ask you, why are you so happy? And then you explain to them why it is you've never been better. I think that would be good. Well, I already mentioned over half of our church family have found a place to serve right here at ACC. But maybe if you're looking for a place, we wanted to give you an opportunity. And so today in your program, there's an engagement opportunity. Doesn't mean if you want to get married. But there's an engagement opportunity worksheet. And there are some needs that we have for people in the church. If you're online, you can go to My ACC, and there's a thing you can click with the logo for this series. But I'd encourage you, if you don't have a place to serve, find a place on here. You know, during COVID, it's been a challenge to get volunteers because we have people that just haven't been able to come back yet. And our children's ministry is desperately in need of some people to step into some positions. If that might be helpful, you can fill that out. And I just want to let you know, if you say you'd like to help in an area, you're not totally committed. You can just say, I'd like to look into it and just be a part of that. But I would encourage you, as one of the disciplines of your life, work to extend your soul, not by making more of yourself, but actually by focusing less on yourself and more on others, just in humble service. Let's pray. Father, all of us sometimes want to feel, think we need to feel important. And the way the world makes most people feel important is by all their accomplishments or all the people that serve them. And what you say makes us really significant. It's kind of backwards. It's all the people that we serve. So I pray we would just trust that. Thank you, Jesus, that you set an example. You left heaven. Become one of us. And even while you were here, you humbled yourself again and served. So I pray that you'd help us because we're going to have to fight against our selfishness, our selfish ambition. But when we do, Father, thank you for the promise that our lives can make a difference far beyond ourselves and even into eternity. If we're willing to serve. And we ask and pray that this morning in Jesus' name. Amen.